We're talking trash.
This is trash.
This is a sweet, sweet trash.
Don't be talking trash.
You believe these trash bozos?
Don't be talking trash. I don't need to hear no trash from you.
I'm the trash man.
Oh, I love trash.
All right, welcome back. Hour two of Talking Trash. Bald-headed Stude is with us. Greg Sussman is gone. Hey, Chris, you know, I got people texting me stuff here. Did you see this thing with Cosmopolitan being removed from the checkout lines? You know, what do you think's going on with this?
I did see that, and I think that people are just sensitive. What's going on? Like, can you really be bothered? You're in Walmart line, and you see a picture of Jennifer Aniston on Cosmopolitan who's not naked at all, and, you know, that picture is offensive? I don't know, man. Like, I don't want to get into too much of what offends people, but I think there's a lot of sensitive people out there in the world.
Well, here's what they have to say about that. You can now go through and buy your groceries with your family knowing that you don't have to be exposed to this graphic and often degrading offensive material. Cosmopolitan, Tony, is degrading and offensive material?
I don't get it. I don't get it. I mean, think about this. If we're men, right? 20 years ago, we didn't have access to the internet and Google and free porn. We would use National Geographic. We never even thought about Cosmopolitan.
Scotty, what is your favorite magazine? Don't say Inside Kiss.
Well, I actually used to write for the official Kiss magazine, but good morning, guys, including Tony. I want to make sure that I note that you're here. And recognize you, but I would probably say growing up it was Inside Sports, but now it's probably Sports Illustrated and ESPN the magazine. But with Cosmopolitan though, those you notice it when you're in the checkout line because the covers the women address very suggestively, and if they're going to do that, the star is next.
We went around the room, Scott. I guess on Tuesday. With this question, so I'm expecting an honest answer from you because we did an hour one. I didn't get to poll you, and everybody fessed up. So now it's you. How many hours of porn per week, or how many minutes of porn per week do you watch?
You started right at the hours.
It's really been reduced over the last few years. You know, I would say probably like in the past, like when I was in my 20s, I would say probably like a good. 10 to 15 hours a week, but now maybe it's
holy
like
shit.
Now it's maybe like
you were right to say hours. Yeah.
Maybe it's like an hour a week.
But wait, let me ask you a question. What is the reason for the reduction? Is it lack of drive? What's the reason for the, or just you don't have the time anymore?
I don't have the time and I don't have the need. I don't know if you understand this, but when you're actually getting it for real, you don't need the porn.
Yeah, but if you do have the porn, you have more stamina with women for real. Like, a lot of times when you're with a very attractive woman, you get excited about it, and it's always good to have a pre-game celebration, and that makes you last longer during the duration of that sexual episode.
Is it me, or is 10 to 15 hours a bit aggressive?
It's aggressive.
I was very aggressive on it. Yeah,
like that's
at least he knows he's admitting.
He wanted me to be
aggressive
honest,
on what
honest.
Exactly?
I know, I understand, but that's like the whole weekend. That's two full work days, 15 hours, just about.
Look, I was in my 20s, man. It's like I had this uncontrollable libido. It's what did you want? I watch porn. I went to the strip clubs.
They didn't have the internet when you were 20 years old, did they?
I know.
Al Gore didn't invent that yet.
But you bought magazines.
The Cosmo magazine.
You went to places in Times Square,
Scott, how much did the plot matter to you? Like, did you ever get a phase where you're like, the plot mattered?
When you're watching 10 to 15 hours, it has to.
No, it's just how the girl on the cover of the DVD looked, that's all.
All right. Here we go. NFL. Let's shift to NFL a little bit. I was reading these comments from John Gruden about Colin Kaepernick, and did anybody else read this article?
Yes. I was so confused after.
It is so – he's just a double-talking moron. He is all over the place. And one interesting thing that I found out, by the way, Did you know that Colin Kaepernick's 96.2 rating in his last six games that he played for an awful team was the exact same as Jimmy Garoppolo's in his six games of 2017, and Garoppolo went for 5 years, $137.5 million.
Amazing, isn't it?
That's crazy. It is absolutely crazy. So I don't know, for those of you who don't know, he says, I think there's a lot of intrigue there. His performance on the field wasn't very good on tape. Now, I don't know. He posted a 90.7 rating on that team for the year. That's better than many of the current quarterbacks out there. I'm sure on tape there were things that were wrong about him. He then shifted to Robert Griffin, and he said, I think Robert Griffin, a rookie of the year, he's surprised that Robert Griffin is still out there, and nobody's picked Robert Griffin up. But, like, Griffin ripped apart his knee, and that pretty much did him in, right? He was never the same after they left him out there.
That's true.
No, yeah, he never was. And Griffin spoke up last year about how teams were interested in him. But when we were talking last hour about, you know, betting on yourself, he had thought that he would wait another year and that the market would be a little bit better for him. But here he is again without a team.
So then he moves over. He's all over the place. He then moves over to Tim Tebow. And he says, Tim Tebow takes his team to the playoffs. There's some surprise that he never came back. But here's the thing. Tebow did. He was with the Jets, the Eagles, and the Patriots. And he couldn't hack it. And so it's not like he never came back. They tried that. He wasn't blackballed. They gave him shots. It didn't work out. Then he moved over to Johnny Manziel, and he started talking about him. So Manziel is now working out down at Texas A&M. This is the second time he's had a pro day. So is he going to be a thing or not? Or is he just having these things and it's not going to go anywhere? Because now he says he'll go to the CFL.
I think it's going to be a thing.
I think Manziel has to take a long road back, and the CFL could be the beginning. You know, it's good that it's not the Arena Football League. But when you look at the state of quarterback in the NFL, you know, there could be an opening for him. Maybe he can use the CFL as a testing ground here. And you know, it's really about people monitoring him off the field. If he can get his life in order off the field, if he's not just talking crap about how he's maturing and he's learned from his mistakes, then I think he could eventually get a chance back in the NFL at some point. I could see it happening before Kaepernick.
Tony?
I think that what's going to happen is that Johnny Manziel is going to have to go to the Canadian Football League because people in the NFL want to see what he does during the week as much as on the field, right? How does he progress each week? How does he speak to the media? Does he let the pressure get to him? So he has to go to the Canadian Football League.
I agree. And I think that it'll be good for him because a lot of scouts are talking about a changed Johnny, what they've seen from him over the past 48 hours, even from this pro day compared to ones in the past. Like, his feet weren't set. He didn't look like he was trying. He looked focused, and teams are very interested. But the biggest thing is what Scott and Tony have said. It's the off-field issues. How can this guy handle himself off the field for a team to take a shot on him? And, I mean, he'll light it up in the CFL for sure. So it's just his off-field issues. I think it'd be a good step in the direction. I think we'll see him before Kaepernick.
So, Chris, tell me this. You have intimate knowledge here of the CFL game. What is it about his skill sets that lent him to lighting it up there? You don't run a lot.
You don't run a lot, but it's just the average talent. Like, I'm not going to lie to people, the viewers, I don't watch a lot of CFL games because the main reason is I just don't think it's very – I don't think there's a lot of skill down there. Gabe will argue, you know, there's a lot of skilled players here. There's a lot of points that are put up on the board, but wide receivers are in motion. There's lots of opportunities for him to put up big-time points and to show his success. It's just it's a lesser talent. The guys, you know, there's a big drop-off, significant drop-off in skill. So I think he'll light up. He'll be one of the best quarterbacks in the CFL. I mean, you ever watch games and there's not a lot of great play from quarterbacks.
Can you
explain? Can he handle the 8% beer?
Yeah. Can you explain to the nationwide U.S. audience that we have here what a rouge is?
No, I can't. I don't watch the CFL because you can sit down and watch a game and you could see a score 2-1. Like, it's not odd for a CFL game to start off 1-1 or 2-1 or 3-1.
So you get one point for the Rouge.
You can. I think it's like if you miss a field goal, the other team can you know, return it, get it out of the end zone, and then get a point for it. I'm not 100% sure on it. I CFL, everybody basically makes the playoffs. You can have three wins and make the playoffs and win the Grey Cup.
Were there eight teams or 10 teams?
There are CFL? Eight teams, I believe.
Eight teams. All right. All right, let's move over to some more related Colin Kaepernick news here. The Seahawks, Scotty, have cut Trevon Boykin, the guy that they chose over Colin Kaepernick. Now, he's another domestic violence incident here. They dropped him like a rock right away. So does Kaepernick get another shot to go back there? They gave him a long, hard look, no?
Yeah, that when I thought that originally when Kaepernick got jettisoned from the Niners that was the first place that he was going to go, but I can't see it happening again. It just seems like the league is, you know, colluding against Kaepernick here, and nobody's going to let him back. You know, the fact that they had a guy like Boykin really speaks to the fact that Kaepernick would have fit, because you know they wanted like an athletic type, you know, who could run and throw on the run. To back up Wilson, you know, to pretty much keep the scheme of that offense. And when they go to Austin Davis instead of Colin Kaepernick, I think that speaks volumes about the situation that they probably won't look at him again.
Can I ask a rhetorical question?
Shoot.
Anybody think Russell Wilson put a stop to Colin Kaepernick? Because Colin Kaepernick is beyond a football player. And there's a lot of black players in the NFL that look up to him for what he did and what he means. And Russell Wilson didn't want that guy behind him.
Probably not, because Russell Wilson, A, is friends with Colin Kaepernick, and B, I don't think as a football player, I don't think he'd be worried about Kaepernick taking his starting job because he's the better quarterback.
Well, I don't know,
there may be something.
It's still surprised that just not one team. Like, I understand everyone is... You know, they don't want to take the hit and the bad press, and you know, teams are sticking together here, but I am surprised that not just one team has stood up and be like, I don't care, I want to win some football games here, and Kaepernick is a better option than our
third. I thought that was going to be Baltimore, but
they got bad press,
they shouldn't do it. Yeah,
I thought, yeah, you know, with Ravens, not to do it.
I think I mentioned this yesterday, I don't know if I did it on or off air, but there are going to be problems if Eric Reed does not get a job. Because then it's happened twice, and there's no way you can say, well, this circumstance wasn't a good fit, this circumstance wasn't a good fit. It's just clear. Does anybody disagree with that? If Eric Reed does not get a job,
he's not going to get a job, Ed, it's going to be a problem. Yeah. You're right.
I disagree.
For once.
I disagree.
Do you think, Tony, first, do you think Eric Reed will get signed?
I think he will, because he's too good there. But the problem is, like, the Baltimore situation. It's close to the nation's capital. You can't have a guy kneeling for the national anthem. The other thing, Eric Reed, like, I look at this, like, Jacksonville will never sign him because they have the same situation where people are pissed off about this whole kneeling thing. So I can see why Colin Kaepernick doesn't have a job, and I can see why he's not going to get there. I mean, when any company, right, we don't
but
have
why
a
would
problem.
Eric Reed get signed then?
Well, that's the whole thing, is I think that the NFL owners, someone will say, you know what, he's a really good player. We need really good players. We're going to hope that it isn't Colin Kaepernick's a quarterback. We're hoping we can slide this by.
Yeah, Kaepernick, so you can't say that's a guy that you want starting for your team. So that's a good point from Tony.
Well, let me ask you guys this. If Colin Kaepernick was Russell Wilson and were playing on that level, would somebody have signed him? Or still no?
Yep. I think so.
Yeah, they would have. They would have.
All right, so bottom line is he just wasn't good enough to overcome that.
Yeah, like you pointed out.
He's better than what Arizona's thrown out there.
Yeah, but like you believe his play. But nobody feels that he's worth taking the risk to the point where, is this guy going to lead us to the playoffs and beyond? I don't think there's a lot of scouts out there. Kaepernick's play really fell off the table progressively after they went to the Super Bowl. And, you know, this is a guy that's a risk as a player. And then you add he's a risk also off the field. Nobody wants to take it. It's not worth it for, you know, the player that he can be.
Yeah, I guess so. It's weird. It's getting kind of awkward. The whole thing's getting awkward.
Statistically, though,
it's gonna get worse.
I don't think he's a great quarterback. I think he's on the fringe of being a starter or you know, backup.
Exactly.
So that's why he doesn't get
started. No, but Tony, but he's clearly one of the top 64, is my
point. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Probably but top 22.
If you look at the numbers, though, his final year, they're hard to argue that he doesn't. He wasn't one of the better quarterbacks there. And he put up 16 touchdown passes, 4 interceptions. As Mike said, he had a quarterback rating of 90. I mean, we have some poor quarterback play in this league.
This is what I'm saying. Like, he's the starting quarterback in the NFL because there were teams last year who not only did those mediocre starting quarterbacks go down, but they could not find a backup. And like I said,
yeah,
Arizona is an example. Let's play Bradford. Are you kidding me with Sam Bradford? Like, putting Kaepernick, who at least has 468 rushing yards 1 year, 639, 524, 415. We saw what he did in the postseason run. He just came, like, inches away from winning a damn Super Bowl. And his game fell off. Yes, I agree. When Harbaugh left, I mean, certainly fell off. And some of the management. He just needs some more good coaching. And a new – it's just – it's unfortunate, really.
Just saying, is he worth the trouble? You know, will he help us win ball games, you know, despite the stats? And I think it comes down to general manager's feel. He's not going to help us win ball games in a big way.
Hmm. It's polarizing for sure. It is polarizing for sure.
Has been.
All right, starting tomorrow, Major League Baseball opening day, the Fantasy Sports Radio Network will provide the opportunity to play free daily fantasy baseball with chances every day to win 2 tickets to a 2018 World Series game. It's sponsored by the wonderful folks over at DKMS, whose quest it is to rid society of blood cancer, a noble cause indeed. Go to dailyroto.com/fantasy to find out more about the DKMS position and get in on the free daily fantasy baseball action. That's dailyroto.com/FNTSY.
Do you love watching your fantasy player score a winning touchdown? Now imagine you actually got to call that touchdown play. The Fan Controlled Football League is putting play calling in the hands of fans with real professional football players running the action. Visit fcfl.io to learn more.
All right, we're back. Sticking with the NFL, all this talk the last couple of days with Odell Beckham. Anybody think, Chris, you think Cowboys going to cut Dez Bryant?
I think it's a pretty good possibility. Yeah, I do. And it's crazy to think about, but he was not great last year, and he didn't live up to the money, the expectations. So I wouldn't.
He's not an elite receiver. He's not the same ever since he sustained injuries a couple of years ago. Does anybody dispute that?
I don't think he can at all whatsoever for what he gets paid, commensurate with the other wide receivers in the NFL. And Tony and I would talk about this all the time with the salaries. You know, he's certainly not worth it. He's lost. He's still a big target, but he's lost the explosion that made him special.
This is a tough decision for Dez Bryant. Do you know?
He doesn't have much of a choice, right? They cut him.
Well, he could restructure if he wanted to.
Quick. I don't think they're going to cut him. I think they're going to ask him to take a pay cut.
And he doesn't seem like the type that's want to, right? Yeah.
Then they're going to cut him.
What do you say?
Well, let me ask you this. It's one thing for him to take the pay cut, but it would be a different thing to ask him to take a pay cut and have him not be the highest paid receiver on the team. Would he be willing to do that?
He should be, because look at Dallas. I mean, you got a guy like Zeke and a young quarterback. There's one thing that they want to do, and that's run the football. Yes, it's nice to have a guy like Dez, but when you look at last year, and we're all in agreement here, he did not handle top coverage at all. He did not handle that. He was out-muscled. He didn't have big games against top corners, and you can't be paying a guy that much money when ultimately what you want to do is feed Zeke and give him the ball 25-plus times a game. So he needs to restructure, or he's going to have to find a new team.
Yeah, the Cowboys, when they nearly beat the Packers a few years ago, was so dangerous because even before Zeke, and when they won those 14 games, because they could threaten defenses really with two major weapons. You had Dez and Zeke, and the two of them were just, you know, so hard to cover, especially in that 2014 season.
All right, let's stick with the NFL here. Yesterday at the winter meetings, the NFL passed a rule against lowering your head to initiate contact with the helmet. now be a 15-yard penalty with a possible ejection. So how is this going to work? Because even the ball carrier lowers his head a lot of times when he goes into a crowd and makes contact with the defender. So if a ball carrier is running through the line and he lowers his head and drives it into somebody's chest or somebody else's head, they're going to give a 15-yard penalty and toss him from the game? How is that going to work?
No, it's just going to apply to defensive players here because they feel like
it's not what it says.
What I've read, you know, the speculation about this, and look, I could be wrong on it. Is that the ball carrier is not tackling anybody? It's not defense. So it's going to apply just to defense.
This is something that I mean. This should have been done 5 years ago. I coached football for 17 years, and I used to get crazy when a kid would lead with his helmet because, the last thing you want to do is call up a kid's parents and tell them your kid's paralyzed, go meet him at the hospital. And they just get so lazy, and these guys are so talented athletes that you're going to see a bunch of flags to start the season, and then everybody will be able to – this will be, like, forgotten.
Well, I think this is kind of arbitrary, too, on who's lower. You know, some people duck – Or they have to, you know, I don't know. If some of these running backs are half the size of the defenders, and you have to go down to tackle them, and if your head makes contact with them, is it only if you make contact with their head, head-to-head?
No.
Or is it just lower your head? If you plow me right in the gut, is that a penalty?
If you hit your helmet first, it's a penalty.
It's tough. Like Tony said, there's going to be a lot of flags at the start of the season. It's going to be an adjustment period because what people do, you're right, Mike, when they tackle, think about it. I mean, when defensive backs are going to tackle, that's what they do. They lean forward. They put their head forward like that. So
these
it's going to have to be an adjustment period.
Are never going to make a tackle. They come up like torpedoes, like projectiles going after people's legs with their heads.
They don't even.
You talk to current and former players. Like I spoke to Chris Dolman about this, and you see what Richard Sherman has said on Twitter. You know, I don't think the guys who play the game have a different perspective on this. They're not intentionally trying to, you know, injure anybody. It's just, you know, when you launch yourself, it's very hard to control yourself. You can't control yourself when you're in the air and, you know, control where your helmet's going to go. So it's going to change the style of play. Somewhat here.
It's
going to
bring
fundamentals
back because these guys are so great athletes. That's what, like Sherman and Chris Dolman, that they just fly it. And to Mike's point, by reading this rule, it does apply to ball carriers. And to be honest, I think this is going to be not enforced on running
like,
backs.
That's almost impossible. Judgment calls, and 15 yards is a height and a possible ejection. Listen, Tony, when you coached, you know, you would teach kids head to the side, wrap them up, drive your legs. There is none of that now. It's just like a projectile, barrel into the person as hard as you can and knock him over. A lot of times they don't even rep. They just, you know, just ram the guy, really. And this is crazy. This is almost unenforceable, I would think. And who runs? The last guy who ran with his head up was Eric Dickerson, who didn't bend down and crouch when he ran. Every running back bends over and puts their head down first, don't they?
Yeah.
When they go into a crowd?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why a lot of these guys are getting concussions. And that's how Freeman spoke out about that last year, too. I mean, he suffered a couple concussions over the course of his career. That's how he runs. That's his style. I mean, look at him. He runs people over.
I think the running back situation will be similar to the double play situation in Major League Baseball, where, you know what, you don't really need to be near the base, and I don't think that they'll really call this unless it's egregious.
You know, Scott brought up Sherman. His quote, and I got it right here. He says, it's ridiculous. It's like telling a driver, if you touch the lane lines, you're getting a ticket. It's going to lead to more lower extremity injuries. So it's going to be an adjustment period for some of these backs to tackle. I don't know how this is going to work. It's like Tony said, it's going to be a lot of flags right off the get-go for some of these.
But they'll figure it out. Because the bottom line is, like Mike was saying, though, I don't necessarily agree that it'll lead to more lower extremity injury. Lower because you're not hitting the head as much. So statistically, that's a true statement. But if you hit with your shoulder where you're supposed to hit instead of your helmet, I think, you know, it can be in the torso area.
Yeah, and that's the thing that the players talk about. It's very hard to control exactly where you're going to hit when you launch yourself and you're in the air. But, you know, they had – look,
but they never had to before. That's the thing, Scott.
Yeah,
these guys
it's a fine
I'm giving
line.
Them credit because they're great athletes and they're going to adjust to whatever the rules.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I think they're going to – I think they're going to adjust too. I agree with you. You know, it's professional sports are a constant game of adjustments, and you know, there's been look that the league has changed. You know, to your point, Tony, and you know, it's more a passing league than ever before. It used to be more of a defensive league, so the players will adjust.
Well, speaking of concussions, here, you guys remember ex NFL linebacker Corey Widmer?
Anybody? Vaguely, yes.
The name sounds familiar.
Yes, didn't he play locally here?
Giants.
Yeah.
I think he was number 90. Bavona, was he 90? What number was he?
He was number 90. He played in like the 90s. Number 90 played in the 90s.
Okay. So he turned down an invitation to the Montana Hall of Fame because of concussions. He said concussions ruined his life, and so he's not going to go into the Hall of Fame there. He doesn't want to do this. But here's my problem here is he took the money, right?
Yeah.
So now he doesn't want to – somebody's trying to do a nice thing and put him in the Montana Hall of Fame. I don't know how many football players are from Montana, how often they get to do this. But he doesn't want to do it. He's going to shun them. Like, he took the money. Who doesn't know that if you're going to ram into people, you might be able to get a concussion? He made the decision to do it.
He might not be making the best decisions with his mental state right now. Or, you know, maybe he feels – the only thing I could say that – and I'm only speculating here – is maybe he doesn't feel comfortable appearing in public about it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't have to – just get inducted. Just he won't – he's refusing to go in.
I would take the honor. That's a pretty big – I think it's a pretty big honor. I mean, you take it. Especially if you're going to take the cash.
There's only 50 states.
Yeah.
Montana's better than at least seven of them.
I was inducted into my local town Sports Hall of Fame. But mind you, there's only like 10,000 people there. So. Yeah, our high school team was undefeated in hockey.
Really?
We went undefeated the entire season, and then we lost in the provincials. We got spanked, which was heartbreaking. But, yeah, our entire team was inducted. It's a small, small town, but I wouldn't have been turning down. Now, I'm not obviously at the level to play professional sports, but I wouldn't be turning down any Hall of Fame inductees or inductions.
I don't know. It just struck me wrong. The guy took the money. He had an entire career. I understand I feel bad for the guy. I don't want anybody to have a concussion. But then when they're trying to celebrate your career, now you give back the money, and then let's try that.
I knew a guy from the FSWA Hall of Fame was actually going to turn down the induction, and he had to get talked into it.
See, like, what would his reason be for that? Like, why turn that? Why turn something?
He didn't like the way that people were being voted into the Hall of Fame, and felt that people building the industry would be overlooked. So once he got in, you know, they kind of fell in line and started inducting a lot of the older guys that built the industry.
Chris Bavona, you want to weigh in here?
Doesn't this kind of sound like say, like someone comes back from war, they get a Purple Heart, they get some sort of honor. They don't want to take it because of the PTSD that they got from being there, and maybe, or you know, in some cases, some people didn't want to be there in the first place. You know, could this be kind of the same way how Widmer is, and obviously on a much, much less scale here?
You can't tell me he didn't want to be there in the first place.
I'm not. I just think maybe he didn't. You know, maybe once he started playing and he started getting all these injuries and he started getting all these concussions, that he realized that like I played football, I played in the NFL, but I'm a shell of myself. I can't.
Why didn't he quit? Wasn't there a San Francisco player linebacker that in his rookie rookie year just quit?
Yeah,
and he gave back a couple million dollars.
Two coffee something coffee that. Right?
Yeah,
it was a running back too, right? That.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just
started, what you're seeing is a lot of these call not a lot, but in those situations they take the 1 year contract, it gives them a little cash to start a business for themselves, and then they quit.
Yeah.
All
right. So Mike Tomlin doesn't like TD celebrations. All of a sudden, he says it's not a good look for young people. But here again, how many people he's got half his team celebrating in the end zone?
Anybody
that's a bad that for him to say that it's okay. Your entire team celebrate like they had some of the best NFL celebrations all year. Juju Smith-Schuster, Antonio Brown, even Martavis Bryant was getting involved. Le'Veon Bell. I mean,
they were team act.
If you read his statements, though, that doesn't mean that he was in favor of it. He said, "I don't even pay attention to it."
Then why didn't he do something about it?
I walk away. He said, "I walk away and just let the game move on." Now, that's a valid point, but at the same time, you can't stop his players from doing it because it's a rule, I guess. I don't think you can impose that as a team rule that you can't celebrate.
You can do anything you want. You're the coach.
Yeah, you can do anything.
If you act like an idiot in the end zone, I'm not playing you. Yeah.
All right. You know, that's fair, but, you know, and that's valid because I don't agree with him here. You know, at its top levels, you know, I don't agree with Tomlin. Football is also entertainment. So, you know, what's wrong with entertaining the crowd? I just don't agree with the whole thing.
Not just the crowd. And keeping your players happy. I mean, Juju Smith-Schuster came onto the scene, and he excited a lot of people. And part of it was his celebrations and, you know, a teenager scoring all those touchdowns. It's a little bit of motivation for the guy. Like, you can't tell me that he wasn't thinking – like, they, as a team, collectively had some good team celebrations. You can't tell me that. That is just a little bit of motivation for a teenager to get in the end zone and dance his ass off and be talked about. So, yeah, Tomlin needs to settle down a little bit, worry about coaching.
Listen, there's no doubt in my mind. I'm old school, and I prefer, like, Walter Payton, hand the ball to the referee, even Barry Sanders or some of those people. But that said, I don't mind them doing it if that's what this generation wants to do, and they do it and they have fun with it. Everybody seems to like it. But you can't, as a coach, come out and say, I don't like it, and it's not a good look for young people, and then do nothing about it. Don't put that quote out there, because then you're a part of the problem.
And to your point, though, it's not like we didn't grow up with it either, Mike. You know,
Billy White Shoes Johnson's,
you know,
that wasn't
guys like that.
Thing.
You know, look,
he wasn't humping the goalpost.
The electric slide, the Redskins, the Broncos. We saw stuff like that.
The fun bunch.
There's
nothing like urinating in the end zone. The fun bunch, they were dancing around in the end zone.
But still,
I still
it was
don't
celebration,
understand that
even
from
though
Beckham.
It's not as extreme as it is now, though.
I give Beckham
understand that touchdowns.
The Ica shuffle?
I like think that, Tony.
How is that offensive to anybody?
I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying, you know, we came up with that type of thing, too. You know, it's nothing new.
This is new. Urinating in the end zone is new.
Oh, well, the urinate, that's new. It's getting taken to a new level. But, you know, we're all serious about football here, but, we also want to be entertained.
What about the
Was that entertaining to you? Did you find that entertaining?
No, when Doug Baldwin, you know, mimicked, giving a dump in the end zone, I didn't find that entertaining.
I like when Tiger went to the star.
I thought the Beckham thing was entertaining, to tell you the truth.
Well, let me ask you this. Which was more entertaining, taking a dump or taking a wee?
I think the
probably the urination.
Yeah, he looked like a little dog there.
I like Joe Horn's celebrations. When he used to like take the
Who
phone
was the one
to,
yeah,
the
put it in
phone.
The in yeah. the under the cushion? Scored a touchdown and he took out the front. Somebody had a Sharpie, didn't they pull it out of their side?
Oh, that was
Terrell Owens. Terrell Owens, yeah, they signed a football.
I mean, he came prepared. He signed the football. He had it right in his sock, signed the football, gave it to a fan.
He got fined for that, too.
He got fined for everything. The best thing was when he ran to the star. When he ran to the star in Dallas, I thought it was great. And you
somebody
could just hear
came
that
to
it was great.
Somebody
you can hear
to,
the commentator. There's going to be a flag on the play, and then boom, T.O. got smacked.
Yeah, who pushed him off? Somebody pushed him off the star. Who was that? Was that Emmitt Smith?
It might have been Smith. Emmitt Smith. I think it was. Yeah, because he was with the Niners at the time, and then later on when he was with the Eagles, he did it again, but he stepped on the star on the helmet in the end zone, so he didn't go all the way to run to center, but he still did it. But it was
Vivona. I know what you like. Vivona, you like the Thanksgiving dinner in with the Vikings. That's got to be yours.
That was my favorite case. That's why I love Case Keenum specifically.
Well, you got to invite everybody to dinner.
I like the Star Wars one with the Colts. That was cool.
We're gonna take a short break here. We come back. We're gonna talk about this new catch rule
in the NFL, which everybody's been clamoring for a long time. We're going to dig into this because I have what I think is a unique take on this, and we'll go over it after this.
Steiner Sports is the leading memorabilia provider for the New York Yankees, Rangers, Giants, Knicks, and the Brooklyn Nets. Featuring hundreds of items from your favorite athletes, Steiner Sports is your source for the best sports gifts. Go to steinersports.com/box and shop our collection of memorabilia boxes, which include 10 gifts for the price of one. We've made one for each of your favorite teams. Hurry, supplies are limited, and these are some of the best deals we have ever offered. So go to steinersports.com/box today.
Dancing in the end zone here. All right, let's go over this new catch rule. You know, it's been a long time where people complaining about what's a catch and what's not a catch. Depending on who you're a fan of, sometimes it benefited you, sometimes it's gone against you. But they've basically come up with a rule here that says if you catch the ball, it's a catch. So how hard was that to come up with all along, and why didn't you deal with that? Like, I don't understand. If you catch the ball, it's a catch. Why is this not always been the rule? Why'd they try other things?
But,
and do you think what they've done here, Tony, we'll go to you first, is enough to take out controversy, or is there still going to be controversy anyway?
I think there's always controversy, no matter what. But just the way this is written, right? If you catch the ball, it's a catch. But you can't use the same word to describe the action like that. That leads me to question, what is a catch?
Chris, what do you think?
The thing with the rule for me is, I agree with Tony, there's always going to be some kind of controversy. There's going to be something that just happens. You know, the football move I like. The third step, you know, the Jesse James, and we saw it, you know, Zach Ertz. They basically use this new rule with Zach Ertz, but this is the ability to perform such an act. What is that? What is the ability to perform such an act? Like, is that if that third step is, it looks like that third step is going forward, but he doesn't touch the ground before the ball comes loose a little bit. There's still a little bit of a gray area here for me.
What I don't understand, Scott, is from reading this. And maybe I missed something. The biggest problem for me here is in the field of play and in the end zone was not the same rule. Is it the same now? If you catch a ball in the end zone, the same rules apply as if you catch it between, you know, in the field of play? Because that's always been a contention of mine. It's because it's been ruled differently.
I would think in concept it would be the same, but the way it's going to be called on the field – you never know for sure because it's obviously different in the end zone. Actually, it's not when you talk about you got to have 2 feet in bounds on the sideline on the 20-yard line, and you got to have 2 feet in bounds. You know, it should be conceptually be the same, but to Chris's point, you know, that's the whole thing, the ability to do so. I mean, somebody, you know, not even in the game has the ability to do so. A guy standing on the sidelines has the ability to do
so. I could have made it so much more simplistic. That's why I have a little problem with it. I think if you got 2 feet on the ground and you have the ball in your hands, it's a catch.
That's what I mean. It's a catch. Yeah. Yes. Tony, how good is this? How good is this? The referee comes on. They do a review. The referee comes on. He gives an explanation. The guy caught the ball, so it's a catch. And that's it. Why do you need to say anything
that's a
good
further? Good point, Tony. It appeals to Mike because he oversimplifies everything.
Because the problem is, with the way I read this rule, the receiver must control the ball, establish himself in bounds, and perform a football. If you catch the ball and then you go immediately down, is that a football move?
Falling down, you could be a klutz.
That's what I'm saying.
If you suck and you don't have any ability, if you don't have the ability to make a move.
To me, that's a catch, but that's not what I perceive as a football move.
That's what I mean. Rule three is just so confusing. Like, okay, a catch is a catch. Wow, we've kind of figured that out. Now we can laugh about it. But then you get to rule three. It's like a football move such as One, a third step. Two, reaching slash extending for the line to gain. Three, or the ability to perform such an act. Why even put that in there and just confuse the hell out of all of us? Because it's just, again, so these refs got to be kind of play a guessing game, and it's just going to be some inconsistencies there.
You know how
Here's
I love chaos.
Something interesting would hit.
This is what we should do, Scott. This is what we should do. And they have the technology to do it. When there's a play under review, they should just let the public vote and put it up and post it. And just let the public vote on whether it's a catch or not. That would be awesome.
That would be total chaos. And
the Patriots would get no catches ever.
You know what, though? let's assume, and they've already said, you know, stuff like the Dez Bryant catch would be a catch. And the interesting thing, reading up on, you know, on the history of that whole Dez Bryant thing, there was the assumption, okay, the Cowboys would have advanced in the playoffs. There was still 4.5 minutes left, and they were up by 2, going up against Aaron Rodgers, who had been torching them all day. The Cowboys still might have not won that game.
Yeah, but it was a catch. It changes the landscape.
It was.
Of the game.
It was. But I'm saying there's a lot of people just generally assume that the Cowboys would have advanced if he would have made the catch. When you give Aaron Rodgers 4.5 minutes and you're only up by 2, there's no guarantees that the Cowboys advance.
I think it was in the Super Bowl.
America's
team. Was it in the Super Bowl we had a play similar to the one that happened in Pittsburgh, or was it one of the playoffs?
Yeah, it was the Zach Ertz. It was the Zach Ertz touchdown catch towards the end of the game.
Actually, like Jesse James.
He actually took, though, 3 steps.
Yeah.
And like, why does that even have to get reviewed? How is that possible?
See, that's the football move. That is in there for Jesse James
running?
And Zach Ertz to confuse us. The extending in that third step, you got to make that clear for everybody. Obviously, everybody knew that like should have been a touchdown. Even the Jesse James one, he caught that
running
ball.
With the ball down the field. That's a football move.
I guess.
They should just come out and say he caught the ball. It's a catch. That's it. I don't. It's crazy to me. It's not. So we'll see how that plays out. I don't expect there to be any less complications though. Because people are going to say he didn't make a football move or he didn't catch it or whatever it is. But I think this is just insanity. I don't think they'll ever get it right. I don't think they'll ever get it right. All right, let's end up with some baseball here last couple of minutes. Everybody's eagerly awaiting opening day. Chris, let's go to you first. What do you find to be the most compelling story coming into this season? What are you looking forward to most seeing?
That's a good question. I looked at some of the younger teams and some of these prospects. I'm a big, you know, prospect guy. I like to see, you know, we talked about the Braves briefly. I had said that they improved, and it's like, where did they improve with some of the roster? But, I mean, they got the best prospects in baseball, at least the most significant prospects in baseball. So I look at a team like Atlanta and the Chicago White Sox and Moncada and Ucana. Because they cheated, sure. They lost a couple of their prospects. They got punished. Yeah, they did. Yeah. So I'm looking at just some of these younger players just to take the next step. Because we've seen over the past couple of years some of these guys come up and be successful. I mean, Chris Bryant, Carlos Correa. You know, Springer is now into a nice groove. So I'd like to see Ucana and Moncada, two of these guys, and take the next step.
Tony?
I'm looking to see if the preseason World Series champion New York Yankees pitching staff has an ERA under 5 or not, and whether that's going to piss people off, because their bullpen's going to cover a lot of warts. But the Yankees pitching staff, to me, is the story everyone's going to be following in about 30 days.
The Yankees call themselves underdogs because they have the 7th highest payroll in baseball. You guys are not underdogs. Come on.
Scott, what about you?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the dichotomy of the American League there. It's, you know, everybody is just assuming because Judge and Stanton are on the Yankees that they're automatically a World Series team. Meanwhile, the Red Sox could actually be the best team in the East. And as Justin Verlander says, you know, we're still the same team. And, you know, we won the World Series and we beat the Yankees. So are the Yankees going to be able to overcome the Astros and the Red Sox? It's not going to be easy. And it'll be very interesting during the playoffs.
Shouldn't the consensus be that last year's World Series matchup is going to be the same World Series matchup, though?
I think so.
Those are the two best teams, aren't they?
You don't want to oversimplify it like that.
I agree.
You know, I think you have to look at the teams on paper and et cetera and decide, like, it's just not that easy. We can't just look back at last year. That's not how you project things.
But if you had to make a prediction, Scott, how would you predict anyone besides the last two teams?
Well, there's...
I mean, Houston might be better.
Right.
They won the World Series.
The Dodgers have an easier path. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Like the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Indians, the Astros.
Astros.
And when was the last time you saw the same two teams in the World Series, though?
I know, but then you're just randomly picking a team, though. Is that what you're going to do? I mean, I don't know.
No, I think you have to study it. I said that.
Does anybody think?
I mean, we know every player in the league. I mean, the Astros, to me, are the best team.
So does anybody think, Tony, that there's a possibility? I haven't heard anybody say it, that there's a possibility that Aaron Judge ends up this year being closer to Joey Gallo than he does Mike Stanton.
Oh, I agree. But
I haven't heard one person even suggest it.
Yeah,
is it not a possibility? He's turned the corner and that's it?
Scott poo-pooed me when I said he would hit 230.
Chris?
I think it's that low.
I think I maybe 230 is could be a slight stretch, but I don't think he's a 284 hitter. I wouldn't be shocked if he hit 250, 253, 254, hit 40 bombs and strike out 30% of the time. He struck out 30% of the time last year. He struck out basically the entire spring. He's dealing with a bum shoulder and in the postseason, and he struck out a ton too. And pitchers are going to adjust to him.
Yeah, but here's the thing, that if I took the name Aaron Judge off this guy's back and told you a guy had a 380, batted balls in play and struck out 35% of the time, you tell me he hit 210. And there's nobody that can deny that. Because the name Aaron Judge is there, everybody's, it won't go that bad.
Well, Tony, you have to discount the batted balls in play. Do you have to discount the batted balls in play on the assumption that somebody hits the ball so hard that when he hits it, it's more likely to be a hit than not.
He hits the ball. He's seventh hottest in Major League Baseball.
Yeah that's a totally outlandish BABIP.
Joey Gallo actually, it was number two in hard hit balls, and he has he might not hit 200.
By the way, I don't have him on any of my fantasy teams because maybe there are a couple of people thinking the same way I did, but I actually think that Joey Gallo has more upside than Aaron Judge at this point, only because of where he came from. I think Joey Gallo can hit 225, 230. He certainly walks enough to be able to help him do that. And if he plays every day, I don't see why he doesn't hit as many home runs as Aaron Judge. I don't think they're going to be that far apart in the end, statistically. See, I'm not saying Judge won't be better. I don't think it's going to be dramatically different.
Judge was number two in hard hit, but Joey Gallo was number one. So it didn't help Joey Gallo at all how hard he hit the ball.
Yeah, that's an outlandish BABIP that he had, like, you know, Tony points out. And, you know, with Judge, you know, it's a good point about perception. Tony, we were at the GST draft on Sunday, and two people were sitting there, were watching the draft, and one of them said, "What? Judge went in the second round?"
Does anybody disagree?
He should be a second. He shouldn't be a first. Is that what you're saying, Scott? Like
the guy was saying, why didn't he go in the first round? You know, Tony makes a good point about perception. I don't know if he's a 230 hitter. You know, if it does happen, I'll be the first to say, give Tony the credit. I think he's more like a 250. You know, when you watch these two guys, for Joey Gallo to go up to 250 would be like 40 points. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I doubt he dips all the way to 230.
So here's the
difference. The BABIP is high. He had high BABIP in the minors, but it's pretty high. To Tony's point, he had 228 in the second half of the season last year.
Yeah. Didn't he have a shoulder injury too, though? Wasn't he dealing with a shoulder problem?
Yeah, I don't think he's 100% right now either.
But Gallo's batted balls in play was 250, and Judge was 357.
Yeah, it's a pretty big difference. Mike, we got him last year FSTA draft in round 26. How about that?
Yeah. No, I just think that to me, I don't see in the end. I think their stats are going to be very similar. I think Judge will hit for a higher average. But I don't think it's going to be, like I said, I can see Gallo getting to 225. What did he hit last year? 214? And with his with the amount that he walks, his on-base percentage, I think they're going to hit him second, aren't they, Joey Gallo? He's going to be getting fastballs.
They?
Yeah, they're going to hit him second. Now, that'll hurt RBI opportunities, but he's going to get more fastballs, which is what they're going to try for him. And he walks quite a bit. So his on-base percentage is worthy of having him out there, even though he strikes out a lot. Listen, I've heard Major League Baseball personnel say they don't mind the strikeout because you're not hitting to a double play. It's only one out. So people look at it that way, too.
That's true.
I don't know. It's kind of crazy.
I think they could get the same home run totals. I'll say that.
Similar. Yeah. What do we make of Justin Verlander? The second half of the last year, he was on fire. But he is not a spring chicken. Tony, as you know, I was going on Gabe's show every week, and if he was pitching, the Astros were playing. I was taking the money line. I didn't care how much I had to lay. He was just on fire. Does anybody think he can keep this rolling? He did it in the playoffs and in the World Series.
I don't like doing this, but Major League Baseball opened themselves up to this, so I don't feel bad about it.
You think he should be peeing in the cup?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it in my mind. This is a guy that's a velocity at 35 years of age is higher than it has been any time in his career. How does that happen? Like, Roger Clemens reinvented himself. And CC Sabathia reinvented himself. They became control pitchers. They were good at 35, but they didn't have increase in velocity.
Yeah, it's weird. And you know, in 2010, 2011, this guy's fastball sat at 95, and then you could see the decline. 94, 93, 92, 92, 93, boom, 95. Back up to 95, so... you bring up a good point. I think he's one of the safer pitchers in baseball too. In fantasy, we don't tell people to chase wins, but with Verlander and some of the teams that he's going to play inside that division and what he did last year. And I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he gets another, 20. I mean, he didn't.
So do we all agree that he's going to have an exceptional year? No, nobody finds risk because of his age.
I don't see why. Look, the Tony's got a valid point there. But, we've seen pitchers pitch well way above it. Like, when you go back to Nolan Ryan, even Nolan Ryan was pitching well at that age late in his career.
But I'm saying it didn't have an increase in velocity.
I already said that, your point is valid. But just looking at it from a pure baseball perspective, though, I can't worry about the age when the performance was so good. He looks just as dominant in the spring. You could speculate whatever reason you want, but Tony is valid to do that. But I don't see any reason for a drop off.
Two of the most
FBI
people,
would be the only reason.
The most interesting pitchers to me are Brandon Morrow and Charlie Morton, and the way they've turned their careers around.
Charlie Morton is amazing.
And Brandon Morrow, look what he did in the playoffs. And he never had anything going like he did now. And now he's a closer.
Well, he always had to stay healthy, though. That was the thing for him.
But everybody gives Ray Searing, the Pittsburgh Pirates coach, all these accolades about being a great pitching coach. Well, Charlie Morton sucked for you. As soon as he left you, he became a superstar.
Do you think Charlie Morton should be peeing in the cup?
I don't know what happened.
Just another guy whose velocity has never sat at 95. I mean, that's what 91, 92, 93, 94. He's like increases every single year, but he's got three or four pitches that he can throw. Morton is a really
good pitcher.
The Astros
got a good team doctor, it's starting to look like.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we need to look into the Astros here.
Searing gets it wrong once, though. That doesn't mean he's not a good pitching coach.
They put him on heaven. I just want to take him out.
All right, Major League Baseball opening day. One more day. That's all you got to wait. Get your lineups in. Talk to you tomorrow.